Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. We are conducting an exclusive interview with John Policelli, International Authority in Windows Technologies, widely acknowledged networking expert, best-selling author and certification exam contributor, Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. Today, we will mine John's considerable expertise in Windows Server 2008. John, considering your very busy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us today.
Thanks, Stephen. It's my pleasure to speak to you today.
John, you bring an incredibly long history with wide expertise in Windows operating systems and especially Windows Server 2008. Can you overview the Windows Server 2008 product suite?
Certainly. I've been working with Windows Server 2008 since the first beta build, when it was only known as Longhorn Server. My experience with Windows Server 2008 really falls into two categories. I've developed training and testing products, and I have a considerable amount of hands-on experience. Over the past 2.5 years, I've contributed to roughly 50 training and testing products related to Windows Server 2008. I co-authored the 70-647 Microsoft Press Training Kit. I authored the SAMS Active Directory 2008 how-to book, which will be published in May of this year. I contributed to 9 Microsoft certification exams. I contributed to 3 Microsoft instructor-led training courses. And lastly, I've contributed to 34 Microsoft e-learning courses. I've been busy over the past few years, to say the least. This work has really provided me with an opportunity to drill down into virtually every server role in Windows Server 2008. From a hands-on perspective, I've been working almost exclusively with Windows Server 2008 for the past year and a half. This has ranged from engagements with small and medium-sized businesses to engagements with large enterprises and government agencies. As for the Windows Server 2008 product suite, there are a number of additions, which include Web, Standard, Enterprise, Data Center, Itanium, and HPC. I primarily deal with Windows Server 2008 Enterprise, but I'll do my best to outline the major differences with each edition. Windows Web Server 2008 is similar to Windows Server 2003 Web Edition in that it is designed to be used mainly as a web server. One of the main differences with Windows Server 2008 Web and Windows 2003 Web is the new support for 64-bit hardware. This obviously results in the ability to use more memory and additional processors. Next, there's Windows Server 2008 Standard, which really can be used for the majority of server roles and role features, with the exception of Windows Clustering and Active Directory Federation Service. There are also some limitations for certain server roles when run on Standard. For example, the number of routing and remote access, NPS, and terminal server connections is capped when using Standard. Also, only one free virtual instance is supported with Standard Edition. The next edition is Windows Server 2008 Enterprise, which builds on Standard with support for additional processors and memory. Enterprise does not have any limitations with regards to server roles and features that you can run. However, with Enterprise, there is also a limitation on the number of virtual instances that you get for free. In the case of Enterprise, it's 4 compared to the 1 with Standard. Next, we have Windows Server 2008 Data Center, which again further builds on Enterprise with support for additional processors and more memory. Data Center also includes support for hot adding and hot replacing processors and memory. Data Center does not have any limitation on the number of free virtual instances. It's unlimited. I guess at this point it's important to note that Standard, Enterprise, and Data Center are all available with or without Hyper-V, but you cannot use Hyper-V on Windows Web Server 2008. There's 2 new additions in the product suite. The first is Windows Server 2008 for Itanium-based systems, which really is optimized for large databases, line-up business applications, and custom applications. This edition is designed mainly to provide mainframe class reliability and performance. It offers massive scalability and mission-critical performance. The second new addition for Windows Server 2008 is called Windows HPC Server 2008, which is Microsoft's move into the high-performance computing market. HPC can scale to thousands of processing cores, which is really impressive. Lastly, Windows Server 2008 includes a new installation option called Server Core. Server Core is a minimal server installation and can be used for a subset of server roles, such as Active Directory Domain Services, DHCP Server, DNS Server, File Services, etc. Server Core does not include the traditional full graphical user interface, however.
John, can you provide your top tips on the technologies present in Windows Server 2008? And, you know, there's a whole sort of bevy of technologies, and if you can go into sort of each one and what you consider to be sort of the key tips for each.
Sure, Stephen. Let's start with one of my favorite technologies, Active Directory, or Active Directory Domain Services, though it's now called in Windows Server 2008. The improved auditing capabilities for Active Directory in Windows Server 2008 is really a popular new feature, especially with the new ability to log old and new values for changes to Active Directory objects. Before you go ahead and turn on this level of auditing, though, you should really take some time to identify which attributes you'd like to audit changes to and which you're not interested in the changes to. This can be done on the attribute properties. You actually have the ability to filter which attributes are audited by directory service changes. By implementing this filtering proactively, you will avoid filling your security log with events that you do not really require. Another big feature in Windows Server 2008 is the new read-only domain controller role, which was designed for offices that lack physical security, such as branch offices. This new feature has gained a lot of interest and popularity. However, because RODCs are new, they work very differently compared to writable DCs, so I suggest you thoroughly evaluate your company's requirements for RODCs and really plan accordingly. There are a number of things that you need to consider when deploying read-only domain controllers. I guess I would suggest that you take a look at a Microsoft document, which is called the RODC Planning and Deployment Guide. It can be found on the TechNet Library. It's a great starting point for deploying RODCs. You know, I still remember when I first read about the new global name zone in Longhorn Server. Initially, there was a myth sort of floating around that the global name zone was designed to replace WINS, which was very, very promising. Unfortunately, this didn't turn out to be the case, though. The global name zone is really intended to provide single label name resolution, which is only one of the solutions that WINS provides. WINS does a lot more than just single label name resolution. So unfortunately, I'm afraid that we may still see WINS in large enterprises for some time to come. Windows Server 2008 includes a neat tool to help you plan for high availability. The tool is called the New Validation Wizard. So I suggest before you configure a failover cluster that you run the New Validation Wizard, which will check that your system, your storage, your network configuration is all really suitable for a cluster. You know, it's no secret that the system requirements for Windows Server 2008 are much higher than its predecessors. In my opinion, I don't really see this as a bad thing since the price of hardware has reduced so significantly in recent years. But to ensure you obtain optimal performance, I recommend that you use as much memory as possible. Give yourself lots of disk space, and of course, the more processors you have, the better. In terms of federation, I've learned that the Active Directory Federation services in Windows Server 2008 is not as complicated as it was in previous versions. The new ADFS includes an improved installation and really a better administrative experience. There's also a number of new features relating to group policy in Windows Server 2008, one of which is called Group Policy Preferences, which really can help you move away from logon scripts and achieve better security and policy enforcement. I strongly suggest that folks have a look at this new group policy feature, because there's roughly 20 new group policy extensions, which, you know, at the end of the day, they'll make your life much, much easier. As you know, Server Manager is a new tool in Windows Server 2008. I have to admit that it took me some time to get used to using Server Manager. However, now that I've been using it for a while, I see its true value. Server Manager does enable you to perform a number of the management tasks in a single location. So I really recommend that people make a point to perform as many operational tasks as possible in Server Manager, because with the ongoing use of this tool, you'll really see its value and how it can help you improve some of your operational tasks. As I previously mentioned, Windows Server 2008 Enterprise and Data Center Editions provide Hyper-V and integrated high availability support at no additional charge. High availability is definitely important when you use virtualization for production systems. So if you plan to use virtualization for your production systems, I suggest that you use Enterprise or Data Center Edition of Windows Server 2008. There's a new File Server Resource Manager in Windows Server 2008, which provides a number of new capabilities and improvements over the old NTFS disk quotas. Unfortunately, there's no direct migration from NTFS disk quotas to File Server Resource Manager quotas. However, you can use templates in File Server Resource Manager to recreate your NTFS disk quotas. And lastly, although IIS 7 is designed to be compatible with IIS 6, I suggest you thoroughly test any websites that you plan to move from IIS 6 to IIS 7. IIS 7 is significantly different than IIS 6. I also should suggest that you spend some time learning the new features and the new IIS console before you deploy Windows 2008 web servers into your environment.
So what are your top five tips for IT pros who have to install Windows Server 2008?
Well, the installation process for Windows Server 2008 is very similar to Windows Vista, so the installation is not that complex. However, you know, there's definitely some things that I would suggest. First, make sure you understand the system requirements, as they are significantly different from Windows Server 2003. Also, keep in mind that the recommended system requirements will not meet everyone's needs, so a thorough understanding of your requirements will really ensure that you can make an educated decision on your system requirements. Next, ensure you have enough memory. Windows Server 2008 has a much larger footprint than Windows Server 2003 and Windows 2000 Server. So the more memory you have, the better. I also suggest that you familiarize yourself with the steps to install Windows Server 2008 by using the command line and an answer file. Not only is this more time efficient and less prone to human error, but it will prove to be invaluable when you need to deploy a large number of servers and when you are working with a server core installation of Windows Server 2008. If you've installed Windows Server 2008, you will have noticed that the number of steps performed during the installation process is less than its predecessors. However, this actually results in more post-installation tasks. For example, network configuration and computer naming is done post-installation now. There is an initial configuration wizard, which centralizes most of these post-installation tasks. So I really suggest that you familiarize yourself with this wizard, because it will allow you to streamline the installation process a little more. Lastly, if you plan to use Windows Server Backup, you really need to plan ahead. Windows Server Backup is significantly different than the previous NT backup. For example, a dedicated disk is now required for scheduled backups, and that dedicated disk is reformatted each time a scheduled backup is run. So addressing this without proper planning, as you can imagine, can be very, very difficult.
Those are some really great tips. Do you have any major tips then for managing Windows Server 2008?
Yeah, for sure. So again, you know, Server Manager is a big one. You really need to familiarize yourself with Server Manager. Server Manager replaces a number of the tools that existed in Windows Server 2003, but really in a more efficient and centralized way. For example, the tasks that you use to perform using Manager Server, Configure Server, and the Add or Remove Windows Components consoles are all now performed simply within Server Manager. Server Manager also gives you a centralized view of the status of your server, as well as the server roles that are installed on that server. You know, essentially, you can use Server Manager to view the server roles installed on a server, add and remove those roles, identify critical events for a given role or all roles, stop, start, or restart a service, and manage local user accounts. So really, to manage Windows Server 2008 efficiently, I think you will be spending a great deal of time within Server Manager, which is why I feel it's important that you familiarize yourself with this tool. Next, really learn PowerShell. Microsoft has made a significant investment and commitment to PowerShell, which is echoed by the fact that PowerShell is now built into Windows Server 2008. When it comes to managing the operating system and the server roles in Windows Server 2008 efficiently, PowerShell can really be your best friend. So PowerShell is really designed as a simple single-function command line tool, but there are over 130 commandlets in Windows Server 2008 and over 200 to come in R2. Learning PowerShell will also be valuable as management tools are revamped in coming years. A good example of this is the Exchange Management Console for Exchange Server 2007. In my opinion, you really can't manage Exchange 2007 efficiently unless you have a good understanding of PowerShell. From what I understand, the same approach is being taken for the new Active Directory Management tool, which is coming in R2. It's called Active Directory Administrative Center. Next, you know, I really suggest that you leverage Windows Deployment Services, or WDS for short. Windows Deployment Services is a redesign of remote installation services. It's essentially a suite of components that work together to enable the deployment of operating systems. But our WDS does introduce a number of improvements and new features, which makes it far superior over RIS. I guess I'd also recommend that you invest some time learning the new Reliability and Performance Monitor. The Reliability and Performance Monitor is essentially an MMC that consolidates the previous performance logs and alerts, the Server Performance Manager, or SPA, and System Monitor. This tool will allow you to monitor and assess system performance and reliability. One of the cool management features with Reliability Manager, it provides you with really a visual view of the average stability of your system. Reliability Monitor tracks memory, hard disk, application, and OS failures, which are only part of the puzzle when trying to identify a cause of an issue. Reliability Monitor also records key events, such as the installation of new applications and operating system updates. So really, as a result, you can see a timeline of the changes in the configuration and reliability on your system. It's extremely useful when you're trying to determine the cause of a failure. I guess last, but definitely not least, you need to meet the new Event Viewer. I have to admit, when I first saw the new Event Viewer in Longhorn, I wasn't too pleased with it. However, as I've used this tool more and more, I started to realize that it's far superior to the Event Viewer in previous versions of Windows. With the new Event Viewer, you can view events from multiple event logs. You know, this is really a time saver. As we all know, sifting through multiple event logs is very time consuming and inefficient. The new Event Viewer also allows you to reuse custom views, which is another significant improvement. Lastly, the new Event Viewer allows you to create and manage event subscriptions. Event subscriptions really allow you to collect events from remote computers and store them locally. You know, it's a great enhancement. I can't begin to imagine how much time I've spent remotely connecting to the event log on another computer or multiple computers just to determine if the event that we're looking for was actually there. So event subscriptions ensure you capture these events that you're looking for and really just store them locally.
John, you have this incredible history of success, and you know, you're really literally a world guru in Windows operating systems. So we're going to kind of mine that a bit. You know, what are those little known gems that you have and that you know about with regards to working with Windows Server 2008?
Well, there's a few that I've come across in my last 2.5 years of experience. One of my favorites, again, is related to Active Directory, but nonetheless, by default, any organizational unit that you create in Active Directory is now automatically protected from accidental deletion. It's just a feature that basically adds a deny access control entry to the ACL on the OU, which disallows the deletion of the object by anyone. You can protect existing OUs as well as many other objects like users and groups, etc. And this is all done by just selecting a checkbox on the properties of that object. Another gem is related to when you use the Windows interface to promote its main controller. You now have the option to export the settings that you specified in the GUI to an answer file. This is very useful when you want to build an answer file. A lot of times people sort of shy away from the command line or answer files because they're afraid they're going to make a mistake or they don't really know the command line options, etc. But this new feature just makes the process much more easier for you. If you use Remote Desktop Console on Vista or Windows Server 2008, as I learned the hard way, if you try to connect to the console of another server using the old console switch, this no longer works. They've actually replaced that with the /admin switch, and that's how you now connect to the console on a remote computer through Remote Desktop. Also, you can now view an object's attributes by using the Attribute Editor tab on the object properties. This allows you to view the default Active Directory objects as well as any custom attributes that you've added to your schema. You can also use this new tab to modify attributes that are not system-owned. Now, this is great. In the past, people really had to rely on the default Active Directory and User's Computer's console, which only really exposed the default attributes. You did have the ability to expand which attributes were exposed, but that then meant that you had to do some custom programming and redistribute that tool to anyone who needed it. So now, moving forward with Windows Server 2008, Microsoft's included a new tab that exposes virtually every attribute that there is on an object. I guess lastly, Microsoft has a new release of its FTP service called FTP 7.5. This succeeds the FTP 7.0 that was in Windows Server 2008. At this time, it's simply a download, so you would have to download it from Microsoft's website and install it on a Windows Server 2008 machine. However, it said that FTP 7.5 will be included with R2. There's a number of new features in FTP 7.5 that are definitely worth looking at.
So let's drill down further into Windows Server 2008. Can you tell us more about the new Active Directory in Windows Server 2008 and in Windows Server 2008 R2?
Well, where do I start? In Windows Server 2008, there are a number of new features specific to Active Directory. You know, in my opinion, Windows Server 2008 really includes the most significant changes to Active Directory since its initial release in Windows 2000 Server. First, there's the Active Directory auditing, which I discussed earlier. Another new feature in Windows Server 2008 is called fine-grained password policies. So as you may know, in all previous versions of Active Directory, you had a single password policy that applied to all users in the domain. Essentially, if you wanted to have a different password policy, you had to either create a separate domain and place your users in that domain, or you had to invest in a third-party solution. So now with fine-grained password policies, you have the ability to create and manage multiple password and account lockup policies in a single domain, which is a long overdue feature in my opinion. I also mentioned RODCs earlier. Most people know that read-only domain controllers contain a read-only copy of the Active Directory database. However, there are a number of other features which really further minimize the attack surface in the event that an RODC is compromised. You know, these include unidirectional replication, read-only DNS, credential caching, and the new administrator role separation. So Microsoft definitely put a lot of thought and effort into ensuring that physical security, RODCs being compromised, things of that nature in a branch office won't affect the rest of your Active Directory environment. What else? Active Directory finally runs as a Windows service in Windows Server 2008, which is another great improvement. This really means that Active Directory can be stopped, started, and restarted just like any other service. Essentially, this minimizes downtime for maintenance and recovery on a domain controller. For example, you can now stop the ADDS service and perform an offline defrag of the database or an authoritative restore of an object. In previous versions, you would have to restart the domain controller into directory services restore mode, which meant all services on that server were unavailable during the maintenance. Lastly, you can now take point and time snapshots of the Active Directory database in Windows Server 2008. These snapshots can then be loaded as an LDAP server through a database mounting tool. You can view the Active Directory objects as they were in the state of the snapshot. This is really useful when you are faced with data recovery and you need to determine how far back to recover the data, or really what the data looked like in previous states. As for R2, there's so many new noteworthy changes and features in R2 as well. For starters, Windows Server 2008 R2 will only ship in 64-bit editions. That's not specific to Active Directory, but this is a significant direction from Microsoft. As for the changes that are specific to AD, again, there's quite a few. I won't get into too much detail on each since R2 is still in beta, but I'll list some of my favorites. Microsoft's introducing a new Active Directory recycling bin feature in R2, which really is designed to help ease the pain associated with accidental deletions. I myself have seen organizations faced with situations where somebody has accidentally deleted an OU. And, you know, the time to recover the objects in that OU and group membership and things like that can be quite long in large enterprises. So this new recycling bin feature really helps, alleviate that pain. There's also an Active Directory module for PowerShell and Active Directory PowerShell commandlets coming in R2, which is, great. We'll now be able to manage the Active Directory domain service through PowerShell, which is something that I've personally been looking for some time. As I mentioned before, the Active Directory Administrative Center will be included with R2. It's a new replacement for the Active Directory Users and Computers console. It's really a new look, a new feel. All of the actions are task-based, very similar to IIS, the new IIS console or the new Exchange Management console. There's also a Active Directory Best Practice Analyzer in R2. The Active Directory Best Practice Analyzer really just gathers information related to the configuration of your Active Directory environment. It then analyzes that information and compares it against the predefined set of best practices from Microsoft and produces a report. And essentially in that report, it tells you whether or not you're compliant with each best practice. There's also a new offline domain join feature in R2, which allows you to pre-provision computer accounts in the domain to prepare operating system images for mass deployment. And lastly, Stephen, Windows Server 2008 R2 includes managed service accounts, which use automatic password management and simplified SPN management.
You're quite an expert in Active Directory, and you've done quite a bit of specialization in that area. So I'd be really interested to see what are your best practices for securing Active Directory for large enterprises?
Well, for starters, what I always tell people is Active Directory is not secure out of the box. This is the case with many systems, not just Active Directory. But in the case of Active Directory, there's really a number of reasons for this, and I won't get into them today. But I think it's important to note, because when you secure Active Directory, you really need to accept that as a risk and mitigate it accordingly. For the most part, the methods to secure Active Directory are the same for any size company. Oddly enough, I gave a presentation to the Toronto Windows Server User Group back in 2003, which dealt with Active Directory security essentials. And I think the recommendations that I presented to them almost 6 years ago still apply today. In short, you need to really just give an entity the least amount of access it requires to do its job and don't give it anything else. Now, this is something that people call the principle of least privilege, and it definitely applies when securing Active Directory. The next principle that I recall talking about was the principle of adequate protection. You need to accept the fact that an asset must be protected to a degree that's really consistent with its value. You also need to assume that an intruder will attempt to use any available means of penetration. An intruder will use means that are not obvious, as well as means that really have weak defenses. And finally, a security system is really as strong as its weakest link. So, you know, those are really the key principles that that I've always preached when it came to securing Active Directory. So really, for starters, you can secure Active Directory by building a comprehensive security strategy. The security strategy needs to address all aspects of securing Active Directory. You need to include physical security, you need to include administrative authority, and you need to include the end system. Those are the three key areas that make up a comprehensive security strategy for securing Active Directory. You know, if you address one of these areas independently, or if you address two out of the three, I strongly believe that your Active Directory environment is going to be vulnerable. It's funny because most enterprises, especially large enterprises, have policies in place that, you know, they dictate the level of server hardening required for servers, or policies for security of servers, especially physical security. However, not a lot of companies have policies in place for administration. Now, in my opinion, you can place a domain controller in the most secure data center. You can harden your domain controllers according to the most stringent security guidelines, but if you don't address administrative authority, you're still exposed to a significant amount of risk.
I guess one of the benefits, John, in sort of interviewing you is because not only do you write books in this area, you've contributed to certification exams and certification course materials and so on, and you've been part of the beta programs, and you're an MVP, but you also have a lot of practical experience. So from those experiences and lessons, can you share some of this? You know, from running Active Directory and Microsoft Core Network products for one of the largest banks for 5 years.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, in that engagement that I was involved when there was so many experiences, lessons learned during my tenure there. I guess for starters, the size of the Active Directory environment grew significantly over the 5 years that I was there. I believe when I first started, there was a single production forest with three domains and roughly 8,000 users. And by the time I left, just over 5 years later, the production forest had grown to over 75 users, and there were an additional three forests that had been deployed for testing purposes. Operationally, things are much different when you're dealing with a large number of domain controllers or domains or forests, etc. We had a case where there were a large number of groups that exceeded 20,000 users. Because there were domain controllers that were running Windows 2000 Server, these large groups were always problematic for Active Directory replication. We also had a number of universal groups that had users as direct members, which is another big no-no for AD replication. And I guess, you know, when you manage over 75 servers and a dozen or so different technologies and products, you need to find ways to be more efficient. I recall we found ourselves developing scripts and tools and streamlined processes over and over again and constantly revamping these, which really facilitated more efficient management of the servers and the services that we provided. You know, I was constantly rewriting scripts during my time there, and in hindsight, I think these scripts really saved me a lot of time. I also learned a great deal with regards to Active Directory interoperability. Financial institutions, like most large organizations, typically have a mix of off-the-shelf products and custom in-house applications. I found that there were so many different ways that applications, both off-the-shelf and in-house, interoperated with Active Directory. Some accessed Active Directory with LDAP and some used ADSI. Some used Active Directory solely for authentication while others would use it for authentication and authorization. You know, some queried Active Directory groups for authorization while others queried Active Directory attributes. Unfortunately though, the application and server teams that were deploying these applications, in my experience, did not always have a good understanding of the interoperability requirements, so I really found myself doing a lot of research. This, though, was very beneficial to me because it allowed me to learn a great deal with regards to Active Directory interoperability requirements for dozens and dozens of applications.
Again, reaching back into your broad background, what are your recommendations using or around Microsoft certification exams for Windows Server 2008?
Well, you know, Steve, I really like the new version of Microsoft certifications. I think the new structure makes a lot of sense. I also believe that the exams for the new certifications are much more challenging than in the past. I've taken quite a few myself, and I find them to be more challenging. As you know, I've contributed to 9 Microsoft certification exams. The only recommendation that I can provide is that you ensure you fully understand what is being tested on the exam and prepare for it by using a number of methods. So, you know, oftentimes I hear that people prepare for exams strictly by reading a book, and when they go and take the exam, they end up failing. I do see a lot of value in certification books, especially since I co-authored one myself, but I strongly believe that you need to complement books with additional preparation material. You know, go out and take an instructor-led training course, or subscribe to some e-learning courses, for example. You know, you should definitely purchase some practice tests and ensure you're scoring very high on these tests before you go ahead and take the exam. At the end of the day, I really think that using multiple methods to prepare for a certification exam will really pay off in the end.
So, almost like an additional sort of segue is sort of, what are your top recommendations then for Microsoft e-learning?
Well, there's a lot of time and effort that goes into designing and creating e-learning courses. In my experience, e-learning courses are often created by MVPs and subject matter experts, so you really can expect the quality of the content to be very high when you subscribe to these e-learning courses or collections. Having contributed to a number of them, I know firsthand that a number of e-learning courses include hands-on virtual labs. So, you know, kind of in line with my recommendations for certifications, I think you really need to take advantage of these online virtual labs, because you'll be exposed to more tasks and it'll better prepare you for passing the exam.
You know, you've already touched on this already about Windows Server 2008 R2, but now can you spend even more time detailing the benefits of Windows Server 2008 R2?
Certainly. As I previously mentioned, R2 is the first server operating system for Microsoft to move solely to a 64-bit architecture. This is a, you know, in my opinion, this is a significant change from Microsoft and really underlines the powerful hardware and scaling features in R2. As well, R2 includes a number of CPU-specific enhancements. For example, CPU support increases up to 256 logical processors, which is quite an improvement. R2 also includes additional power management capabilities and some reduced power consumption for servers. You know, these days this is very important. There's a lot of green initiatives that most organizations have undertaken, and I think the reduced power consumption will also be appealing to most organizations that are trying very hard to reduce costs, especially with the economic downturn that we're facing today. Hyper-V has a number of improvements as well in R2. One of the key new features in the new Hyper-V is the ability to move virtual machines between physical hosts with virtually no downtime. This is a feature called Live Migration, which is a great new feature. As well, Hyper-V now has the ability to access up to 32 logical CPUs on host computers, which is twice the amount that can be accessed in Windows Server 2008. So there's definitely some advancements there as well. Windows PowerShell 2.0 debuts in R2. This includes roughly 240 new commandlets. And there's also a new GUI for PowerShell, which will definitely help those who don't like the command line. As I mentioned earlier, Stephen, R2 includes some best practice analyzers for Active Directory, but there's also best practice analyzers for a number of other server roles, including DNS server, DHCP server, etc. These are all integrated into Server Manager, and they work quite well, in my opinion. Lastly, R2 includes IIS 7.5, as well as full support for ASP.NET functionality on Server Core. IIS 7.5, it includes some new modules for IIS Manager. There's also a new Windows PowerShell provider for IIS, And a number of task-based commandlets are included for IIS as well in R2. You know, these are only a subset of the new features to come in R2, and you know, each of them have a number of benefits on their own.
John, you deal with a broad audience, and you're constantly providing services to people, answering their questions, seeing what their problems are, and so forth. So what are the top challenges and their solutions with Windows Server 2008 that you hear about in your work?
Well, it's a great question. I think the one that sticks out in my mind was really one early on when Windows Server 2008 was first released. I ran into a number of instances where clients had software installed on domain controllers that just didn't work on Windows Server 2008. You know, in most cases, unfortunately, the clients didn't really test their software, but eventually the vendor released an upgrade or an update for the software, and in most cases, you know, a newer version would resolve the issue. In some other cases, we had to evaluate other options just because of timing and things like that. I don't see this as much of an issue today, just because Windows Server 2008 has been out for quite some time, but it's definitely something that you still need to consider as you plan to move towards Windows Server 2008. I also ran into instances where clients upgraded their servers from Windows Server 2003 to Windows Server 2008, and when these clients went to use the new Windows Server backup, they realized that they required a dedicated disk for scheduled backups. Unfortunately, they realized this late in the game, and we had to help them, you know, add additional disks and reconfigure the existing disks so that they can perform their scheduled backups according to their disaster recovery requirements. I also had a case where a client wanted to deploy Exchange Server 2007 servers on Windows Server 2008, but they did not have SP1 installed on their Exchange 2007 environment. Exchange Server 2007 Service Pack 1 is the only version of Exchange Server that will run on Server 2008. So, you know, unfortunately, we had to postpone the deployment of Exchange 2007 on Windows Server 2008 until the client was able to install SP1 for Exchange Server 2007 on all their servers. I also had a client that was experiencing some really what I'd call unpredictable issues with Exchange 2003. These issues, they sort of came to life after the client deployed read-only domain controllers in their Active Directory environment. Exchange Server 2007 is the only version of Exchange that is read-only domain controller aware. So any pre-Exchange Server 2007 servers will blindly use an Active Directory read-only domain controller, even for updates that the RODC cannot process. In this case, to resolve the issue for the client, we made some changes to their Active Directory site topology, which really prevented the Exchange Server 2003 servers from using RODCs, and was a fix for the issue at hand. Lastly, I had a case where a client had moved the website from IS6 to IS7, or upgraded from 2003 to 2008, and they had an ASP.NET application that was hosted on their website, and it broke. You know, after reviewing it for a little while, we had to modify the website's application pool request processing mode to resolve this issue.
So what do you consider to be the best resources for working with Windows Server 2008, you know, whether it's presentation, podcasts, community sites, books, and so on?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a lot of information out there today. I strongly think that you know, both Microsoft and the community has done a really good job this time around with Windows Server 2008 information. There was just so much available when the product was in beta, and that information has continued to grow throughout the life cycle of the product. There's a series of, I believe it's 24 Microsoft TechNet webcasts called 24 Hours of Windows Server 2008. So each webcast covers a different topic relating to Windows Server 2008. this series includes, you know, a number of great presentations, and it's very informational, informative for IT professionals. There's also a great Microsoft TechNet webcast called Build High Availability Infrastructures with Windows Server 2008 Failover Clustering. I found this to be extremely useful myself. There's a little known tool called the Windows NT Backup Restore Utility, which is, in my opinion, it's definitely worth downloading. Windows Server 2008 has a brand new backup technology. They've essentially just rewritten their backup solution and called it Windows Server Backup. Unfortunately, with Windows Server Backup, you cannot open any files that were created using NT Backup. So Microsoft has now provided the Windows NT Backup Restore Utility, which you can download and you can install on your Windows 2008 servers. And it's particularly useful when you need to restore any backups that were created with a previous operating system, Windows Server 2003, for example. I also find myself using the Microsoft Active Directory Topology Diagrammer frequently. Essentially, this tool will go out, it'll assess your environment, and it'll create a series of Visio files to diagram your Active Directory topology. It's quite a useful tool. It'll diagram your forest, each domain in your forest, your sites and your site topology, and things of that nature. And it runs very quickly, and it creates the files for you, the Visio files for you, pretty fast. So it's definitely a tool that I would suggest downloading. Both the Windows NT Backup Restore Utility and the Active Directory Topology Diagrammer, they can be downloaded from the Microsoft Download Center as well. Another set of tools that I typically recommend, the AD Find and AD Mod command line tools. These are both freeware tools provided by a fellow Directory Services MVP named Joe Richards. Great tools, very efficient tools. You can download them from Joe's website as well. There's also a number of valuable community sites, which are great resources, you know, when you're working with Windows Server 2008 or if you're wanting to learn the product suite, etc. You know, for starters, the Microsoft Windows Server Active Directory News Group is somewhere I frequent very often. There's a lot of great questions and posted in that news group. A lot of valuable answers, a lot of MVPs, a lot of industry and community experts, SMEs, and things like that that are responding to the posts in that news group. I also find myself frequenting there's a blog that's called Ask the Directory Services Team, which is, you know, maintained by Microsoft's Active Directory or Directory Services Team. It's a blog that's filled with lots of great content, and it's updated regularly. You'll find a lot of information on virtually all versions of Active Directory. There's also some great books related to Active Directory in the market. I recommend the Windows Server 2008 Active Directory Resource Kit, as well as the Active Directory Cookbook. Both great books. You know, of course, I have to recommend the two books that I've written as well, but it's here nor there. Lastly, Microsoft has a lot of great content on the Microsoft TechNet library. You know, this is really typically the first place that I frequent when I need to find information relating to Windows Server 2008. I find that the quality of the documentation that's on this website is very, very high. So it's definitely a place that I suggest that people visit on a frequent basis.
So those are great tips. I mean, they're very useful, and they kind of sort of summarize all of your years of experience of the sort of the best resources that are out there. So what about the future of computing and with Windows operating systems? What should IT pros be preparing for?
Well, you know, in the immediate future, I foresee Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2 sort of earning a better reputation than Vista and Windows Server 2008. I've installed the betas and been using the betas for both of these products quite heavily since January, and both of these operating systems seem to be, in my opinion, more reliable, and they perform better. Not to mention, you know, there's a lot of new great features to come in both of these products. So I really think that IT pros should really familiarize themselves with Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2. Long term, you know, I believe cloud computing is in the future for Windows operating systems. Cloud computing is still fairly new, but it's interesting because the cloud computing market is already crowded by a range of large players. I think, you know, cloud computing has the potential to provide users and companies with great savings. And, you know, additionally, upfront costs can be reduced quite significantly by using cloud computing. And I think, you know, with the current economic conditions, cloud computing is really in a great position to gain momentum in the marketplace. I believe it's important for IT professionals really to familiarize themselves with Microsoft's Azure Services platform. Microsoft has published a great deal of content about Azure on their website, which is something I think would be useful for all IT pros to start reading on.
You know, you get around quite a bit and you travel a fair amount, and you've been advising clients for some time and sharing your expertise globally. You must come across some really interesting stories that you can share.
Sure. You know, one that sort of sticks out in my mind, I'll call it an interesting situation. It happened while I was working for a client in Toronto a few years back. The client's SMS administrator had an ongoing issue where the SMS service account was getting locked out on a regular basis, three or four times a day, for example. Unfortunately, the SMS administrator, he wasn't able to pinpoint why this was happening, but he was able to determine the desktop where these lockouts were originating from. So he decided to physically, you know, pay the desktop a visit, as he called it, towards the end of the day. From what I understand, he explained the problem to the user of the desktop and, you know, told him that he would need to take a look at it when the user left, and the user left for the day. When the user returned the next morning, he found that his desktop was missing from his desk. So as it turns out, the SMS administrator, he wasn't able to find what was causing the issue on the desktop, so he actually decided to take the desktop back to his office and lock it up. Unfortunately, he forgot to tell anyone he was doing so. And interestingly enough, he actually called in sick the next morning, and he wasn't reachable for a few hours. So, you know, let's just say that he really had a lot of explaining to do when management finally got a hold of him later that day.
Well, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, not one you'd typically find, but it did cause some great room for discussion.
I'm going to turn this around, and, you know, we've covered a lot of different topic areas, but, you know, what three questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers if you were doing the interview?
Oh, that's a tough one, Stephen. I'm not usually great at interviewing myself, but I'll give it a shot. You know, for starters, I think I might ask what it is about Active Directory that makes it one of my favorite technologies to work with. As for an answer to that question, well, you know, there's a lot. I find that Active Directory is one of those underlying technologies that most organizations don't really understand, but they know they can't live without it. If you look at the number of Microsoft products and third-party products, really, for that matter, that require Active Directory, you'll see just how important of a technology it is. I've given a number of presentations to various levels of IT professionals and management, and just trying to underline the importance of Active Directory and making sure it's available and things like that. And it's typically not until there's an outage that organizations really realize how dependent they are on their Active Directory infrastructure. What else? Let's see. I'd probably ask whether there were any instances where I implemented a change that went horribly wrong. I think all IT pros have a horror story that they'd rather not remember, but, you know, unfortunately the answer to that question for me would be yes. I had a case a few years back where I implemented a change that it resulted in a fairly significant outage. The change was a very straightforward one, and we tested it, you know, very thoroughly in our lab environments and followed all the proper change management processes, etc. However, because there wasn't a lot of usage in our lab environments, you know, we couldn't really test the impact of the change in our lab. So we were a little bit at risk. You know, we scheduled the change. We went ahead and implemented it. And fortunately, virtually every domain controller in the forest just started rebooting one after another immediately after we implemented the change. We were lucky because the change was scheduled after hours, so the impact was very low. But it's still one of those cases where you wish things turned out much differently. As for a third question, I'd maybe ask myself, what made you get into IT? And I always sort of like when I get that question, so that's why I brought this one up. You know, funny enough, I actually hated computers growing up. I took a few temporary jobs after completing high school, which didn't really last that long, so I soon realized to find my career path. It was something that I really needed to do. And I started looking into the computer industry. It was a hot industry at the time, and I think it still is. I actually took a one-year crash course in network management, which I found to be very useful. It provided me with a great foundation in Linux and Novell and Cisco networking and Windows NT, and at that time Windows 2000 Server was just being released. So, you know, it was definitely very valuable, and the rest has really been history. I've been in the industry for just over 10 years now, and my relationship with computers has really evolved into a love-hate relationship.
So I guess that's a natural sort of entry into this question then. What do you do for fun, or where do you have the most fun?
Well, with regards to, you know, computers and my profession, I'd have to say that it's split really between research and development and creating solutions. I really enjoy looking at new products and comparing features, testing betas, and things of that nature. I usually get my hands on new products when there isn't a lot of public information available, so most of my learning of the product really comes from hands-on work. And that's something that, you know, I really enjoy doing. I also have a lot of fun just creating solutions. You know, I enjoy taking a client's business requirements, translating them into technical requirements, and then designing a solution that maps to their needs. It's, you know, there's really something about this process that truly I find rewarding.
John, you know, this is a question that sort of veers from all the sort of technical areas that we talked about so far, and it's about this UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing, or IFIP, who have this professional practice partnership program, which received full ratification at their General Assembly in August of 2007, and with the first implementation meeting in Montreal happening in October 2007. And this marks an historical inflection point and speaks to IT as a recognized profession with global standards, profession-based code of ethics, and widely adopted professional certification, all happening this year in 2009. Can you provide your comments on this program?
Certainly. You know, I'm very optimistic that these advancements in 2009 are definitely for the better. I've been a long believer that the IT industry is in need of better standards and professional certifications. You know, interestingly, I had a case where I had to look into the Employment Standards Act for Ontario a number of years ago. And what I found was that there's a number of standards that information technology professionals were exempt from, such as standards for hours of work or overtime. And I actually was even more surprised to find that the only other category of employment that has these same exemptions was globally recognized professionals, such as doctors and lawyers and professional engineers. So, you know, really I'm a strong believer that IT should be recognized as a profession with global standards.
Well, and I really respect all of the things that you've contributed. I mean, you're so well known for just your great insight and wisdom and experience and just all the knowledge that you have. So, you know, John, we will continue to follow your many significant contributions, and we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with us.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It was really my pleasure to speak with you today.
This concludes our exclusive interview with John Policelli, international authority in Windows technologies, widely acknowledged networking expert, best-selling author and certification exam contributor, and a most valuable professional for Microsoft.